So what we decided to do actually is, because government solutions, particularly domestically, is predominantly the big part of our business, we actually were guided by the federal contractor mandate, and we still adhere to that, and even though it's been stayed, and we're waiting further guidance from the courts on that. But our culture was zero harm and safety, and so we decided from a company perspective to let's ride with the federal contractor mandate. So as part of that, what we did is we set up a whole accommodations team. We established an accommodations coordinator that we didn't have before. It used to just be cases or accommodations came through HR and then came through legal, but they kind of trickled in, and they were largely disability related. I mean, very rarely did we see religious exemption requests, but all of a sudden, that became the predominant type of accommodation request we got. Was maybe 80%, 85% were religious exemption requests, and maybe 15% were disability related. So then what that required is we would, assess whether or not, just like Karen said, on an individualized basis, whether or not, this exemption should be granted. We took a pretty liberal approach to granting exemptions, at least preliminarily. So, we didn't get into, too much of a, question as to whether something was sincerely held religious belief. We just basically, someone articulated, that they had, some religious basis. I mean, our senior leaders were like, look, we just don't want to get into that ball game of trying to figure out, whether or not, someone's, but at the same time, we did start getting a lot of them that had the, coincidentally had the same exact fact pattern, the same exact, rationale, but we just, preliminarily, it granted those exemptions, and also from the disability, that was a little bit more objective because they had to have something from a medical examiner, that sort of thing. But where it came to whether or not we could actually accommodate was whether or not, depending upon the work site, because many of our employees work on a federal contract site or a federal agency site, they work on NASA Johnson Space Center, or they work for a contractor like Honeywell or something like that, that had site restrictions. Even though we may have preliminarily granted the request, we may have had some site restrictions. And so that kind of guided our assessment as to whether or not we would grant those requests or not. But at the same, so from a lasting perspective, I still see that accommodations coordinator position. It still exists today, and it's probably going to exist, years from now, because employees are much more educated about the accommodation process now. People that would probably never have, requested an accommodation in the past, i.e., a lot of those who, requested religious exemption requests, probably weren't Seventh Day Adventists, and that was the type of religious exemption request we saw for, being able to not work on a Saturday, for example. That was the really, but now people are much more educated and much more willing, I think, to request an accommodation. So I do think from an in-house perspective, it is going to have a lasting effect even beyond COVID. I mean, I think people will, look at their rights under the accommodation piece of it. And it's certainly made my job tougher overseeing our labor and employment practice and working with HR. HR and legals have had to really work together closely as a team to make sure that we're staying on top of whatever this, federal and state law mandates are, and also just from an employee relations perspective as well.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how much literature there is out there, like on the EEOC website about accommodation, and there's just so much more available for employees to be able to become educated on how to use that process. So I think it's really interesting what we'll see moving forward. Let's change our topic a little bit here and talk about what we've all sort of seen and heard in the news, the effects of the Great Resignation, employees just walking out in mass facilities and locations, essentially just no longer willing to endure the current working conditions. And there's a couple of interesting issues here, one on the legal side with something called Section 7 of the NLRA. But before we get there, Karen, from your perspective, what's going on, and why is there such a driving force of just mass exodus of employees from workforces?
So I think that COVID has caused people to reassess their priorities. And there's a very famous country song that kind of takes the thought process and has it in the song's title, which I won't repeat here. But people have decided, hey, I have a limited amount of time on this earth. It can change on a dime. Do I really want to do what I'm doing for the pay I'm doing? And their priorities have changed. And so a lot of people are just leaving the workforce. And of course, then a lot of people are just moving to new jobs because guess what? They have a lot of options available to them right now. The thing that I would say to companies is look at who's leaving and why and really drill down into it. Because what I see a lot of the time is discrimination and retaliation hiding in plain sight. And so you need to pay attention to your turnover and what departments it's happening in, what managers it's happening in, and then really drill down into why.